The original copy of this, or the original recording of this tape, was made by Dwayne Rollison of San Francisco. This copy was made by Hugh Taylor of Sacramento, California. This is a San Jose conference held March the 17th, 1956. The principal speaker is Kent Taylor, better known to most people as Boston Blackie. The running time, approximately 35 minutes.
Where he was from. And he said, "Oh, just say, I'm from all over Southern California." Those of us who heard him in Turlock know what we have to look forward to. And those of you who are hearing him for the first time have a real treat and a very inspirational message. So at this time, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce Kent T. from all over Southern California.
Hi. I gather you can hear me. Well, I'm genuinely pleased to have been asked to come back and talk. Happy to have seen so many of the people that I met and got to know at Turlock. Sorry that I missed the breakfast. When we were first asked to come up here by Roland, we were very happy. That is, when I say we, my wife and I. She thought it would be great, and we had made plans on coming up possibly a week ahead of time. These were her plans. She wanted naturally to attend the conference, but she too wanted to visit some of her money at Tanforan that she left there last year. When I was coming up here by plane, you know, I never know what I'm going to say. I got to thinking a little bit. You know, this is possible. And I went over the preamble. I got to that part. There are those two who are mentally incapable. I got to thinking of what a terrible thing I had done to some of my relatives by coming on this AA program, particularly my in-laws. My mother-in-law, there wasn't anyone now that she could call a bum. You know, the other in-laws, they had no one to call a weak, spineless jellyfish. My brother-in-law didn't have anyone to say, "Now look, why don't you drink like me? Take one or two, and that's it." And then I got to thinking a little bit further back. The first time I was ever in jail, I was booked on what I have learned later is called a 502. I was around 16 years old. Well, now the next 20 years, I managed somehow to keep away from the jails. But I didn't do anything about my drinking. I've never been a social drinker as we know a social drinker in AA. I think the first time I ever stepped over that very thin line that divides the social or heavy drinker from an alcoholic was just before World War II. I'd like to tell you about this. Seems that I'd met quite a few people going over on the boat, and I had been invited to a number of their clubs when I arrived in England. And I was introduced to gin and tonic at 10 o'clock in the morning without ice. And I got on about a 3-day bender. I probably would still have been on it if my wife hadn't said, if you don't get off of this thing, I'm going home. That breath of yours is very difficult to sleep with. And I was over there to do a job. All expenses paid, traveling, and including wine list. That was probably the reason for my going on this 3-day binge, wine included. See, there were so many things I hadn't tried. But I decided that my wife had a good idea. It was time to get off of this thing because I may have to go to work. So I went to a Turkish bath. And at that time, there weren't too many around this particular neighborhood that we lived in London. The one I found was a very interesting place. They were doing a lot of business. And after I'd been in there for about 4 or 5 hours, sweating it out, I became very fascinated with one particular person. He kept going into these different rooms that were at different temperatures, sweating it out, and as he'd come out, his valet would come up with a tray and a glass of champagne. Now, it's funny how your mind will file these things away. I thought, gee, what a wonderful idea. I must try that sometime when I get back home. Now, here's something I can't figure out. The following year, after this particular binge, I never had any trouble. I didn't drink. For what reason, I can't tell you. But after that, it seemed that whenever I took one drink, something inside called for another and another, and there wasn't any stopping. I always became intoxicated to the extent that I could never get off of these things without outside medical aid. You know, there's a lot of hospitals in and around Hollywood and Los Angeles and Beverly Hills, and I have been in every one of them. Some of them twice. I ran out of hospitals. I also ran out of doctors. Now, all the time that I have been trying to figure a way out of this particular problem by using a new doctor or going to another hospital, my wife has been doing a little figuring of her own. She said, you know, this is rather a costly experiment. And I have contacted some people, and they were very nice. They sent one of their representatives out here to see me about you. It's a place down on Wilshire Boulevard. It's a cure. It's called Samaritan. And I've decided that if you ever get yourself in this condition again, I'm going to call these people. I said, honey, if I ever get myself in that condition again, by all means, call these people. Because I was so sure that this would never happen to me again. Well, after about 2 weeks, the pressure of being sober was too much. Now, you know, light wine or beer won't hurt anyone. No. Well, 2 weeks later, the man came out, this representative. He was a very nice guy. He had a bottle with him. And after a couple of drinks out of the bottle, he suggested that I take a ride down to this place. He was going to cure me. Gave me a drink on the way down. When I got there, they asked me what I wanted, and I told them. And I got it. It was a wonderful place, I thought. 20 minutes later, the nurse came in again with a tray, and there was a drink on the tray and a needle. And she said, you can have the drink, but first we must take the needle. Well, I agreed. The aversion cure. Anyone here know what I'm talking about? Well, after that needle started to work, I didn't want the drink. But I had to take it. And I had to take a lot of them. And I could always hear the nurse calling because she'd start down at the end, and each one of these fellows that had had the needle was getting his drink, and he didn't want his. You could tell. And as she got closer, oh, brother, I only had one desire, to get out of there. And I made myself pretty miserable. They let me out. After a few days. Well, I got to thinking on the way home. I wonder if this thing really works. I kept looking at the ads, the whiskey ads. They didn't make me ill. I passed the bars. They didn't make me ill either. I was getting pretty close to home. Thought maybe I better stop. Test it. I did. Played it real smart. I cased the place. Wanted to find out where the men's room was, just in case. I ordered a double. I took a sip. Nothing happened. Another sip. Nothing happened. Well, you can imagine the condition I came home in that night. My wife called these people and she said, "You know, that thing didn't work." Well, I felt they were coming out for me again, so I wanted to hide. Now, our beds are only that far off the floor. That's where they found me, under that bed. I still don't know how I got there. The representative said, "You know, if you hadn't snored, we'd never found you." I'm a three-time loser at that place. And this is a real rough treatment. Well, apparently I'm not putting much effort up to this time to try to do anything about this drinking problem, but my wife is very persistent. She didn't give up. She found another place. Over on, I think it's Pico Boulevard. It's called the Keeley Cure. You know, I bounced in and out of that place so many times. The last time my wife called them to come and pick me up, they refused. They didn't want any part of me. They told her that I was the worst patient they had ever had. That she should commit me because I wasn't any good for her, for my children, for myself, or anybody. And he added, "What's more, he's ruining our business." He always brags about the number of times he's been here. Through my wife's very desperate pleading, these people did us the biggest favor. They said that there was a nurse they could send out to our home to take care of. This nurse came out. She'd taken care of me before in the establishment. We knew each other. And she said, "You know, Mr. Taylor, it's really a shame that you do this to yourself, to all these wonderful people you have around you." She said, "You know, I used to take care of a woman, but I don't have to take care of her anymore. She's joined a group of people that don't drink." She said, "Would you allow me to get in touch with her? And possibly she will get in touch with you." And, of course, my wife heard this, and she said, "By all means." Well, this woman is on AA. Eleanor Lander. I met someone here that remembers the group from L.A. Eleanor sent us a letter, and she suggested that if I was interested to contact a male member of the organization, which my wife hurriedly did. She made this appointment, and she asked me if I'd keep it, and I said, naturally, thinking or hoping she'd make it a couple of months from now. But she made it the following Saturday. And I was stuck. The man I called on was Dr. Haley. And I liked what he said to me. It made a lot of sense. He said, I don't know whether or not I'd want to quit drinking if I were in that business that you're in. He said, but why don't you give yourself a break? Come to a meeting with me. See what it's like. Well, I liked him, and I agreed to go to this meeting. I know how everyone feels that goes to their first meeting, and I certainly didn't feel any different. I was ashamed, frightened. I was for fear of running into someone that I didn't want to see. But yet I was impressed by the amount of people at the meeting. I didn't hear very much of what was said. I heard one thing, and that's all. I heard someone say, total abstinence. I didn't see how it was possible for anyone, for me at least, to stay sober for the rest of my life. And I told Dr. Haley after the meeting that this wouldn't work for me. He said, apparently you weren't listening, were you? And I said, well, I thought so. So he explained to me what an open mind was. I didn't know what it meant to have an open mind, to listen, to not think back, to let what these people were saying soak in. He also said, you know, there's only one thing that I'm pretty sure of, and that is that I'm not going to take a drink tonight. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Yesterday is gone. I can't do very much about that. He says, you know, we work this on a very easy-does-it basis, a day at a time. That's all that's necessary. Well, I thought that I could stay sober a day at a time. He suggested that I go back to the meetings at least 2 weeks. For about 8 to 10 weeks, work the program, get a book, read it and study it. Work it the way it fit me. And then he added, he said, after about 8 weeks of working this program and not taking a drink, look at the wonderful physical condition you'll be in to go back to drinking. Well, now this made so much sense to me. What could be more fair? I went back. I attended the meeting. It's awfully hard for me to tell another person just what took place. I think that everything that I've learned, or everything that I'm saying, certainly was said to me. This certainly isn't original. But things like personality changes. And I, for one, didn't see how a thing like this was possible. How was I to change my personality? Well, now, it happened. This is what happened to me, and I wasn't aware of it. I heard a man talk one night. He'd been on the program a long time. I thought I was having an open mind, but apparently I wasn't, because I didn't like this man. I didn't hear anything he said. I didn't like anything about him. I thought he was horrible. I thought he was looking down his nose at it. Some months later, I heard this man talk again. And I thought, gee, how he's changed. Well, that's the way That's what happened. The one thing that I shied away from, and I think I understand now why, was the spiritual side of our program. Not that I didn't believe in something. I didn't quite know what. But I would have felt much better, it seemed, when God or the spiritual awakening hadn't been mentioned. I was told that not to be concerned with this, because this too would take place just as the personality change had taken place. That no one would tell me what God was, that this was a decision that I would make. It did take place. I'd been on this program for about 9 months. I had never known such happiness, such peace of mind, and I'd arrived at the stage that I wanted to tell people about it. I hadn't had a job. I hadn't even looked for a job. I wanted to make sure that I had something, that this wasn't just something that would appear to be a new toy of some kind. I wanted to make sure. And again, I went to my old sponsor and said, I'd like to start working on some of these steps around the studios where I worked. He said, well, I think this is a wise idea, but isn't there one person who is in sufficient capacity for you to talk to? Instead of going to a lot of people, why not talk to one person? And I knew of such a person. So I called him up, told him that I wanted to see him. And I also told him that I wasn't coming out to ask him for a job. Something I wanted to talk to him about. He said, why, come on out, Ken. I'd be happy to see you. Somehow I felt from his way of talking that he remembered that last binge I was on, and he really did want to see me. To see what I looked like or what had happened. When I walked into his office, I said, I want to talk to you about my drinking. He says, no, now wait a minute. Don't you go telling me you're on the wagon. Because every time one of you hams tell me you're on the wagon, I give you a job, and you get drunk before you get on the stage. I said, no, I'm not going to tell you that I'm on the wagon. I want you to know that I've joined a program, the Alcoholics Anonymous program. I want to tell him, explain some of the steps to him. He said, you know, this can't fail. Anything that is built on principles like this can't fail. He said, you know, something has happened to you. You're different. I believe you for the first time in my life. He also suggested that I take home a couple of scripts and read them. And tell him the one that I wanted to work in. Well, this was a wonderful feeling to leave with. Now, this was just one person. Now, I'd like to go back a little bit and tell you what happened at this very same studio before AA came into my life. I was hired to do a job. And I visited the studio on a Sunday to take my wardrobe out and put it in my dressing room. And I ran into the director and producer on the lot on a Sunday. They were checking over some sets. And they said, gee, Kent, you look wonderful. When you get through with your wardrobe, why don't you stop over at a certain place and we'll have a drink? Well, I thought, why not? I've been on the wagon for 2 days. No wonder I look wonderful. Drink isn't going to hurt. So I stopped by and I had a drink with him. We all left. I'm sure that that's all they had. I'm only getting started, as you know. Following morning, about 3 o'clock, I'm still drinking and I'm loaded. I had an early call. I got up in the morning and, it was brutal. I had to take that treatment, you know, that we learn about in order to shave without cutting my throat. My treatment consisted of about a half a pint. Now, this is fine. I'm going along great. I get to the studio and the makeup man says, "You smell good." Well, you know, he shouldn't have said that. I resented that. I went into my dressing room and was starting to get dressed. And the assistant director came in and said, "We made a mistake. We won't need you until about 11 o'clock, so just take it easy." That was before I knew what take it easy meant. At 11 o'clock, when they needed me... Oh, I hate to tell you this. I fell right off the sofa flat on my face. Well, they didn't fire me. They said, "I'll go on home and sleep this off. We can shoot around you today, but be in good shape tomorrow." Well, I resented being sent home. So, you know, I made no attempt to stop. I came back the following day in worse condition, again sent home. This went on for 3 days, and they realized that I wasn't doing anything or making any attempt to get off of this, so they hired a bodyguard, one to stay with me during the day, one to stay with me at night. They didn't fire me, and there was no reason why they had to keep me. They could have fired me, and they wouldn't have had to pay me a penny. Then, when I did come back to work, I don't have to tell you the feeling that goes with that. Wanting to say something, you're so ashamed, and you feel so sure that it'll never happen again. You go around and you tell people how sorry you are. But they listen. It was in one ear and out the other. That was the last job I had before AA. That's what I did. And 9 months later, I went right back to that place with some little knowledge of the program and made my one effort to make amends to these people. And this was the reception. They asked me to take home a script and pick out the one that I wanted to work in. Now, I'd gained a great deal more, I think, from the program at that time than I realized. Because while this was a wonderful gesture on the part of the studio, and I felt fine, I also decided that I was going to start a new career. I didn't want to do any more of what was then called B Pictures. So I called this man back and told him this, that I was going to start a new career now that I started a new life. And that I didn't want these particular kind of pictures. He hung up on me. But it was only a few weeks later that I was put under a long-term contract to these same people. Wherever I have worked any of these principles, the reception has been the same. To me, this program, the foundation of my life. And I think that this program can mean so much, not only to us, alcoholics, but to the non-alcoholics. I've a thought that I've been kicking around for quite some time now. I'm going to throw it at you to see how you receive it. In the last 20 years, there's been a great deal of progress made in science and medicine, religion. Just think back of all the progress that has been made. Nothing has been done about the alcoholic. They still want to keep him in the gutter. I wonder if, let's say, in Grandma's day, she had been taught what we all know, that alcoholism is a disease. I wonder how many lives it would have saved. I wonder how many families it would have kept from breaking up. I wonder what reaction it might have had on us here if someone had taught then what we know, that alcoholism is a disease and should be understood and treated as such. I think that it's our job to educate as much as we can society of this fact. For the first time in my life, I know that I've gotten a hold of something that is so good that if everyone else felt as I do about it, there wouldn't have to be any war. This wonderful program, the 12 steps, which one of our well-known ministers who has had this analyzed from every angle has said that he feels that these principles were written by God, only Bill held the pen. And if our whole country, and it could be, were based on this foundation, what a wonderful world it would be. This is the most important thing in my life, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being so nice,
and I'll see y'all later. Thanks very much.